On this edition of Radio Survivor, we follow up on last week's show. We'll take a deeper look at Nevada Public Radio's bid to take over programming of the community station owned by the University of Nevada. We'll hear from a volunteer at the station.
I really hope that doesn't happen. KUNV is a valuable asset to the community and to the university.
And from the CEO of Nevada Public Radio.
This is about having a really great, exciting future for KUNV.
Plus, the student manager of the sister student-run station expresses her concerns.
We're left out of the agreement, and there's just no protection for us.
Welcome to Radio Survivor. This is a program about radio that matters. We tend to look at the left end of the dial, low power FM, college radio, independent podcasting, independent internet radio, the stuff that we think is worth listening to. My name is Paul Riesmandel.
My name is Eric Klein. Yeah, the kind of radio stations I like.
Yes.
If you don't mind me saying
stations
so.
that serve communities and podcasters that serve constituencies. And communities, virtual communities, I think, who are, you know, really focused on that independent element or staying, you know, independent. And independent doesn't necessarily mean that they don't work for somebody else, but that they continue to be able to express themselves responsibly and freely, I think. Or maybe irresponsibly. I don't know. I don't want to put that on people. we try to be responsible here, I think. And this show is this episode's all full of us being responsible. Following up on last week's program, where we had a fairly long discussion about KUNV, which is a radio station owned by the University of Nevada at Las Vegas. And there's a proposal in front of their Board of Regents. So that's basically the board of directors sort of for the university.
The decision makers.
The big decision makers for Nevada Public Radio to take over the station, take over the operation of the station.
Right. So that was a big College Radio Watch segment with Jennifer Waits, who covers college radio for Radio Survivor in depth. And she brought that story to our attention. And we talked about it based on what she had read. And what your feeling was, what your gut feeling was, and your snap research of surfing the internet while we were talking. And then we had a series of responses and offers for more information from more direct people who know what's going on and who have a stake in the outcome. And so that's what today's show is going to focus on, is we're going to go in depth again. Jennifer set up three interviews with a community volunteer DJ at the community station that is
KUNV,
which it's not a college station. This is where I trip myself up, and I'm willing to do it out loud.
I think that you know the semantics. There is no standard definition of a college station.
Here's my standard definition of a college station, which I'm now learning is so flawed. But a college station is a place where students. Play music that they like for their college community. And if you live in that town, what a benefit to you. You get to listen to what young people like.
And I think that's what people think of.
Right.
But we're just sort of noting the fact that universities own radio stations, generally speaking, and these stations sometimes are actually commercial.
Right.
Sometimes they are public radio outlets that air lots of NPR talk programming. Sometimes there are classical radio outlets. Sometimes they air other types of music.
Sometimes
of them are student run.
Yeah, some of my favorite college stations, it turns out, only have a mix of student DJs, and then there's other volunteer DJs who may or may not have been students in their previous lives, and the whole thing has an overall joyous music appreciation and some public affairs sprinkled in. This particular community radio station that's a college radio station was in its current form a jazz station with a small amount of student DJ on air in an overnight shift.
Yeah, that's a new development.
Which
it
was
happened,
a new development.
In May and June of this year. And we'll learn more about that.
And we're talking about this radio station because the people who are a part of that station very recently found out that big changes were in the works.
Right, that there's this proposal in front of the regents made by Nevada Public Radio to begin programming that station, to basically assume its operations and turn it into a different station.
Yeah. And Nevada Public Radio is a large public radio presence in the state of Nevada and in Las Vegas,
City. Yeah, it owns a news talk station and a classical station there in Las Vegas. It is, you know, in the news talk sites, your typical NPR affiliate has a national public radio, not Nevada Public Radio. And they'd like to take on KUNV and try some new programming aimed at young people, which we'll learn more about from these interviews. And what's great here is, I mean, we made a lot of guesses last week. We were working off of press reports and the record that Jennifer was able to get to. And then we were contacted by the CEO of Nevada Public Radio, whose name is Flo Rogers, offering to talk with us and to sort of offer clarification and correction. And you were also able to talk with a volunteer at KUNV.
Yeah, Ken Lang.
And a student at UNLV who is the station manager for the student-run station. And that's the thing we should point out up front, is that there is actually a student-run station at UNLV.
Yes.
That does not operate the primary FM signal.
They're on HD2. Rebel Radio.
Rebel Radio. So, and it's more of what you were just sort of talking about, is what you think of as a typical college station.
Yeah. And so if, just in case people need to know, HD2 would mean that it's on high definition. Is that high definition or?
No. So HD radio says that HD stands for nothing.
It's on digital radios that only people who have digital radios in their car or at home can hear. But it also functions much like any internet radio station would. You can also listen to it on your phones and on your laptops, yeah, if you are a college student.
And it is students who are on that station, the Rebel, the HD2, some of whom now have been allowed to have these evening shifts on KUNV, their main FM signal. So there's a bit of a relationship between these two stations. Again, that we'll learn about more. So we want to kind of fill out what's going on here. And for me, this is important. Because as Eric has pointed out last week and pointed out many times before, we seem to hear about these stories that these seem like these ominous shutdowns and takeovers where, you know, in some cases you hear about it seems like a public radio group wants to take over or is sold or buys a college radio signal. It often seems like nobody knows about it until the last minute, till it's last ditch. And the circumstances are a little murky, a little cloudy. And here's a circumstance where things are a little less murky, in fact. And we were able to get some of information that helps to clarify the situation a little bit more. And in part, it happened because the decision had been scheduled for a Board of Regents meeting on December 4th. And that was the day we went to record our podcast.
Right.
And the decision didn't happen. It was tabled. So nothing is happening, but more information is coming to light.
I think another thing that we can say that these stories have in common is that we have a community radio station that is how things were operating in the past is about to change. And people who love that community radio station stand to lose something vitally important to them. The listeners and the volunteers and the staff are being faced with a challenge, and that's such a familiar story to me, both working on Radio Survivor but being in radio. The idea that you need to defend your community station from challenges outside the station is we could write an opera about those feelings and how universal they are when they come up. And so here we have another situation that's very similar, and we're trying to understand both how those people feel inside of that station facing those changes and how the people feel outside of the station who are proposing the changes, where they're coming from.
Well, I think that in Radio Survivor's history, all right, so Jennifer Waits, our colleague, has documented and reported on many of these situations. And this is really the first time where we're getting a little bit more inside information. We're able to uncover a bit more before the decision is made. In part, it's just luck because the Regents decided to table the decision. In part, because it looked as though they had a very packed meeting with other controversial agenda items that they needed to take care of. And this was the less important or less pressing one to take care of. But there also seemed to be an indication, as noted by the president of the university, that perhaps there was more information or additional review needed to happen before the decision should be made. And it seemed to be entertained in part, at least because people showed up to the meeting to speak on behalf of KUNV as it exists. And so I think there's a great time right now to hear from Ken Lang, who you and Jennifer talked to.
Yeah, Jennifer found him because he's one of the organizers. He's the he's a volunteer DJ at the station, and he his name is on the Facebook page, which appears to be the primary hub of organizing against the deal.
Against the Nevada Public Radio deal.
And so that's how Jennifer reached out to him, and we recorded the interview.
My role in the past couple of weeks has been that of, I think an organizer would be the best description. We had a situation where the station staff, as employees of the university, really weren't free to act. I have a lot of experience in terms of issue organizing and responding to attacks, or sometimes leading them. And so I think I became the go-to guy on this particular issue.
So when did you find out about changes that were proposed to the station?
Well, most of us found out just a couple of days before the agenda went out to the Regents. It has to be published publicly about 2 weeks before the meeting, somewhere in that neighborhood, maybe 10 business days. Some of us had a little bit of indication that the KNPR had been nosing around earlier in the year, but it really hadn't manifested itself in anything more than maybe a probe or an expression of interest, which they've done periodically over the last, I don't know, 10, 12, 15 years. It's a kind of a periodic incursion to see what, what's going on and what they might be able to make happen.
And that is Ken Lang. He's a volunteer producer at KUNV, which is the radio station owned by the University of Nevada, Las Vegas. It's a community radio station for all intents and purposes, staffed both by paid staff and by volunteer staff, principally a jazz station, although it has some
contemporary jazz.
Contemporary jazz, although it also features some public affairs programming and recently added student-run indie rock, hip-hop, and electronic music programming in the evenings. And he was telling us a little bit about how the volunteers there found out about the proposal by Nevada Public Radio to take over the operation of that station from the university or on behalf of the university and to change its programming. So then you, Eric, and Jennifer were able to talk with Flo Rogers, who is the CEO of Nevada Public Radio, ostensibly, a lead driver behind this proposal to take over operations of the station and to begin programming it. And so we're going to hear a little bit from her about really how this idea and this proposal came together.
KUNV is being run as a sort of community / university station, because the university is subsidizing it at about $225,000 a year right now. And they've lost their CPB funding, and then they've lost some of their state funding as well, which is separate from university funding. My understanding is the amount that's raised against their budget, they're raising about 2/3 of the budget that they have themselves, and the university is picking up the rest. But without that CPB money, that's going to get bigger. But more importantly, because I think it has a bigger financial impact, is you take away the cash money from the CPB, but you also go out from under the CPB's umbrella licensing for music and streaming rights. And so UNLV is faced with the actual possibility of having to pay their own music licensing, web streaming, any other performance rights that the CPB covers automatically. the president that's there right now is Len Jessup, and he has been in office a little bit less than a year. For a year before that, there was an interim by the name of Don Snyder. And before that, the president was a fellow called Neil Samotrisk. So Neil Samotrisk is the number one Prairie Home Companion fan that I know of. And Nevada Public Radio ended that program. They ceased airing it because it was just too expensive for us and it didn't generate the audience it used to. And so I thought, as a courtesy, I'm going to call Neil Samotrisk and I'm going to tell him that we're going to make this change so he doesn't just, you know, run into it and feel, you know, wow, something I really care about's gone away. So I call Neil Samotrisk, and in the course of that conversation, he said, well, why couldn't we buy that program? And I said, gosh, Neil, it's pretty expensive. And with the CPB money, I don't know. I don't know if you could do that. And so that was what sort of really made him become aware of, oh, yes, that money is real money. And it's going away. So these conversations about the ability of the station to qualify for federal money, they have gone back between myself and presidents for 10 years. And so, you know, when an interim president was in office, and I knew that the money had gone away because we administer the state portion of all of this. I just said, look, are you interested in hearing how we could work with UNLV to bring this station into the potential that it represents for you? And he said, yeah, let me know what you got. And so I went away and did some modeling. And in between times, I had received a grant from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and I think it was probably late 2013. I received a grant from the public from CPB. They had an RFP out for people to do, for stations to do business modeling to look at potential partnerships and consolidations, and I can't remember if it was 2013. Yeah, I think it got done in early 2014. But we had already been doing some business modeling about not consolidation, but strategic partnerships. That's the more accurate term. Strategic partnerships between Nevada Public Radio and all of the public broadcasting entities in the state, because the CPB absolutely wants to make sure that their dollars are spent efficiently and they're not duplicating effort. And perhaps, you know, spending federal dollars in a way that, you know, they'd rather have a few stronger stations that are really efficient than be funding more stations that are less efficient. So that is how the whole thing came apart. You know, that's how this whole conversation went from what's the outlook for the station to get back into CPB grants versus what could happen if Nevada Public Radio was the operating partner, and then all of those benefits of CPB qualification would come along because we're CPB qualified.
Flo Rogers, the CEO and president of Nevada Public Radio.
And so taking some of those facts on the ground there, when she talks about CPB grants, those are grants in the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. The grants that she's talking about are probably community service grants. These are grants which this independent, federally funded agency gives to stations for acquisition of programming for sustaining their community service. And in the last 5 years, those grants to KUNV have indeed been going down. So according to the CPB's own fiscal year reports for 2011 to 2014, we see a reduction from 2011 when the station received $86,000. Dollars to 2014 when it received $52,000. And what's also happening in the background here is that the standard for stations to receive these grants has been changing. So a big change underway is for the 2015 and 2016 fiscal years. In order to receive these grants in the first place, stations need to raise more money themselves, and more money that does not come from granting agencies. So right now, that standard is $100,000. They need to raise at least $100,000
from listeners?
from listeners and from other sponsorships, basically not from any sort of federal grants. But going into 2016, that minimum is going up to $175,000. But that's for stations with one employee, one full-time employee. If they have more than one full-time employee, that minimum goes up to $250,000.
Can they have 10.1 FTE employees?
They can, yeah. But that the standard would be $250,000. And so looking at KUNV's most recent pledge drive, they raised $60,000.
Okay.
So what it does appear to be, what I would conclude from
they're
looking at the
there.
Record, well, they're halfway
there,
third of the way there, barely, because probably their new standard will be $250,000.
Okay.
So it means that the likelihood that they'll continue to receive this federal funding is going away. And this is happening to community stations all over the country. It's a background thing that we can't really get into too much more than that. But it just gives you a sense for the fact that indeed, because of changes in the way that the Corporation for Public Broadcasting is making its grants, lots of stations, KUNV being one of them, are losing their eligibility to receive this extra infusion of money, which can help them to operate. And she made that mention of the Prairie Home Companion, right? That of that there had been the president who said, well, why can't we air it on KUNV? So I wanted to find out the answer to it. And I found out that
– Right. And in case that wasn't clear, the characters in her anecdote was that was the a leader at the university who was like, well, we have a radio station and I love that show. Why can't I have that show on our radio station? And the answer is it's too expensive.
It's expensive. In fact, in a city the size of Las Vegas – it would be $33,260 a year.
Half the budget of the I don't know their budget, but
it would be
half of the money that station happened to have raised.
In their, more than half, yeah. Than they raised in their pledge drive, or roughly 63% of their annual CPB grant as received in 2014. And I do not have any data for 2015 as of yet. So that just sort of sets the scene. I want to just make sure that we're able to have these sort of hard facts about the fact that it does appear that KUNV is losing funding that it would otherwise therefore have to replace. So at the same time, with all of this background, this financial background, Eric, you asked Flo directly, so is the university's interest in your proposal for Nevada Public Radio to begin taking over the operations of the station, is it specifically about money? And this was her answer.
No, I don't. I think any time a university is presented with a proposal that allows them to more effectively direct resources toward their priorities, I think any university administrator at the senior level is going to say, I have an obligation to look at that. But it also comes into you also have to think of the other objectives and, you know, what is the mission of KUNV as it is right now? I think this proposal coming from us is an opportunity for the university to take a look at KUNV and say, well, what do we want this station to be? Because right now it is not a student station. HD2 is a true student station, and they seem to have a really great bunch of individuals having that college radio experience. But you've also got the journalism students who maybe would say, well, you know, I want to go into sports broadcasting. Can I get a sports broadcasting experience? So I don't know how the station at this time is meeting those other kinds of objectives that I would imagine a university would have, because you know, right now playing smooth jazz is a format that's generating a modest audience, but I don't know if I could make an argument for putting smooth jazz on a public radio station today. I don't know if I could make a good argument for saying 30% of the airtime is controlled essentially by volunteers for a, you know, a patchwork of content that musically is very diverse, very interesting. The talk programming, not so much. So I think this is a great opportunity for the university to say, look, we've got a really sound business case to go in this direction with Nevada Public Radio. But if we don't do that, what should this asset of the Regents be doing for UNLV as a fantastic institution that's really on the upswing? So how do we bring KUNV into that portfolio of things that we put front and center and say, this is the excitement around UNLV today in 2015? And then how do we make that meaningful for the students that are involved, the students who are involved in the journalism school, and the students that are on campus? I don't know. I haven't spoken to many students on campus who would say that smooth jazz is a musical format that's important to them.
And again, that was Flo Rogers, who is CEO of Nevada Public Radio. And so I looked into the ratings in Nevada just to get a sense for what that listenership disparity is. She contends that the contemporary jazz, or smooth jazz, as she called it, format doesn't bring in a lot of listeners. So I went ahead and looked, and the last time that KUNV has showed up in the Nielsen, formerly Arbitron radio ratings, was in September of 2014, in which case it had a 0.2 share. So that means that 0.2% of the Nevada radio listening audience was tuned in any given average quarter hour. That equals 3,466 listeners.
Should community radio be a popularity contest? Sometimes don't important stations have small audiences?
You know, I not going to take a position on that at the moment, so much as I wanted to just check these numbers.
Yeah.
Because there's also an argument to be made that stations that nobody listens to, who do they serve in that case?
Yeah.
And how do they fund themselves?
Right.
So I realize that ratings are always this difficult line, and my advice to most community stations that they not subscribe to ratings and use other means to both assess and serve their audience. But that certainly if, you know, it comes through in fundraising. So I just wanted to double check and in fact check on it. I can make a comparison to Nevada Public Radio, to their news talk station, which in most recently in November has a 1.6 share, which equals about 27,728 people listening in any given quarter hour. But, you know, beyond listenership share, you know, it's important to understand what exactly Nevada Public Radio proposes to do with KUNV should it take over the operation of that station. And in fact, Nevada Public Radio intends to offer something entirely different than what is currently on the station in the genre that it or format coming to be known as music discovery, which we have talked about here on the show. And Flo will explain more on that.
It's 100% reboot because Nevada Public Radio is willing to take on the risk and every single last penny of expense. The UNLV brand will be front and center, and we will completely reboot and say, first off, music discovery can mean a lot of things. And so music discovery, the first job is for me to discover what this market will want from that age, that demographic that's on and off campus. So yes, you've mentioned the Seattle station. A lot of people mentioned KCRW, the current, KUT, the station in Dallas, et cetera. All of those stations that participate in View House that we want to get involved in. We will look at those stations and we will say, what flavor of music discovery is going to be the most resonant here in Las Vegas? And obviously, another big item is to finalize, you know, the involvement of, you know, how students and how the interaction of the student station, HD2, which is completely unchanged in the proposal. One of the first things I will be doing is looking for the emerging talent that's coming right out of HD2 and is already there. And so HD2 student channel is unchanged. I'm not quite up to speed with the exact way that it's governed as a student club. However, that will continue, and it will also be the place where curriculum projects can air and all of that kind of good stuff. One of the other things in this agreement is that Nevada Public Radio takes on all of the expense of maintaining those facilities, including the student facilities, and we have a designated amount of studio time that will be reserved for students to complete those curriculum projects each week as well. And naturally, Nevada Public Radio will take on the sort of the general engineering expenses of maintaining that facility. And in the agreement, there's a graduate assistant position. There's a couple of paid internships as the baseline. And those individuals would be doing production. They would be doing the production of the View House project that we want to be involved in. They would be doing social media. They'd be doing digital stuff. But in terms of, you know, hiring students, that hiring students to be weekend or overnight talent, that would be absolutely on my radar screen for as soon as possible.
Again, it was Flo Rogers, the CEO of Nevada Public Radio, explaining her organization's proposal to take over operation of KUNV, the FM radio station owned by the University of Nevada at Las Vegas. She was explaining a little bit about what their plan would be for the programming, making it a so-called music discovery station, such as KEXP, which is a station we've talked about here before in Seattle. And these are stations that tend to be focused on new music, indie rock, but other sort of new musics as well. And they tend to target a younger audience as opposed to the straightforward sort of classical or NPR talk audience, which tends to be around 50 years old. They look at targeting people who are in more of an 18 to 35 demographic, which of course also includes students of college attendance age. And we'll note that the university's Board of Regents was originally going to vote on this proposal on December 4th, but tabled the vote indefinitely in part to gather some additional information. Now, you heard Flo mention KUNV HD2. That's the all-student-run station, the Rebel.
Rebel Radio.
Rebel Radio, sorry, at University of Nevada, Las Vegas. And it broadcasts on that HD sub-channel and also online. And it features a three-genre format of indie rock, hip-hop, and electronic music. And Eric, you and Jennifer talk with Kylie O'Rourke. She is the student station manager of that station, and you want to get her perspective on this proposal. Like Ken Lang, the volunteer at KUNV, she sort of found out about the same time right before Thanksgiving, so didn't have a lot of time to kind of come together with a response to it. And she acknowledges that there is a proposal for the HD2 channel, the student-run station, to stay as is, but she still expresses some concerns.
The proposal does say that we will stay the way we are, but that seems to ignore the fact that we pool costs with our FM station. And we also, from the proposal, we've read that there will be a lot of limitations about how we could fundraise, the student station could fundraise, which really puts our money situation in jeopardy about could we sustain ourselves. You know, you can only ask student government for so much money before it becomes really unreasonable. And so we really felt kind of uneasy about all of this. Like you say, we can stay the same, but also we're not going to have professionals mentoring our students anymore. We're not going to have anyone to teach our training class anymore. So we really felt that was uneasy about all of it. Like, where was our place really in this proposal?
And that's Kylie O'Rourke. She's the station manager of student-run Rebel Radio at University of Las Vegas, University of Nevada, Las Vegas, which operates the HD2 signal on the main signal, KUNV. And I think that's an interesting point there, that she says that there's a mentorship basically going on between the staff and volunteers at the main contemporary jazz station, KUNV, and the students on the HD2 station, where the staff runs their training programs and helps them become better broadcasters. That was an aspect that wasn't clear, I think, when we first heard about it. And I can kind of understand why they'd be concerned about such opportunities continuing to exist. I do want to note that Flo Rogers of Nevada Public Radio did say that the proposal is for Nevada Public Radio to take care of the funding for that HD2 in their proposal. But I don't know the details. So I don't know if that would address Kylie's concerns or not. And of course, another one of her concerns is the fact that this year, KUNV, the main FM signal, started running some programs run by students during the evenings, their night shift.
Yeah, and not too late at night, it turns out, starting at 9 p.m.
Starting at 9 p.m.
Sometimes you hear the night shift and I think, oh, that's very nice of you to let the young people have their show at 2 a.m.
Right.
But no, 9 p.m.'s That's Radio O'Clock around my house.
Yes, indeed. And that's and this programming block happened after a long absence of regularly scheduled student programming on the main FM signal of KUNV. So Kylie tells us a little bit more about why she's concerned about that loss.
We had had students fill in for certain shows on our FM station, and they really seemed to like it, and they seemed to be really good at it. So we, you know, the students kind of got together and we're like, how can we make more of this? We sat down with our general manager and our ops manager, and we really figured out how we could get students onto our main station again. Especially now that we have our student programming at night, the night shift, that would all go away, which is something that, you know, we told our students, this is coming, this is going to be really big, you know, you put together reels, I hope you're ready for this. And then to only do it for less than a year would have been really devastating for a lot of people.
And you also asked Kylie to explain why being on the main analog FM signal is important to students, why that's something which they wanted in the first place, and why they want to preserve it compared to the fact that they do have a fully student-run HD2 signal.
I think the most obvious difference is just, like, you know, people are listening. HD technology is so new and so few cars are equipped with it. It's, you know, really hard to know if you're just speaking out into this empty void when you're on the HD2, but it's a lot more tangible with our FM station. And then we get a lot more feedback too. We get people that call in, we get a lot of tweets of people who are like, oh, like, I'm listening to the show right now. And that's something you don't really find on our HD station right now. A lot of our DJs there have to go out and find their audience as opposed to an audience just finding them.
And that sort of parallels what we've talked about, the aspects of HD radio we've talked about here on the show, in that it seems like a great technology, but the fact that there are very few receivers out there, or people often don't even know how to use them when they're in their car, means having an HD2 signal is you know, sort of a year supply of Rice-A-Roni consolation prize.
It's like, if I may generalize, it's like 95% an internet stream.
Yeah, I think so.
Because who knows how many people have HD radios compared to how many listen on the internet, but it's probably something like that.
Probably is something like that.
And that overnight, that 9 p.m. to the early morning shift that Kylie was talking about, there was also a music change for that station. Instead of jazz, it was indie music, indie rock, hip-hop, R&B, and electronic music, which was exciting.
And much more, obviously much more youth-focused compared to contemporary jazz. And then finally, Jennifer asked Kylie if there was anything positive about Nevada Public Radio's proposal. If, you know, having looked at it, is there anything that she liked about it?
Personally, to me, the thing that is the most appealing is the format that they're proposing. A music discovery format would be great. I mean, I know I listen to like KEXP all the time, and that's their real hallmark for the format. But I think that's definitely something that I really like. But at the same time, I look at other music discovery channels, and we're already doing a lot of the same thing.
And so that is Kylie O'Rourke, who is the student station manager for Rebel Radio, which is KUNV HD2, all student run, but digital only. So it's HD radio, which is digital radio, and online internet radio, but all student run at University of Nevada, Las Vegas, discussing plans, proposal from Nevada Public Radio to assume operations and programming of KUNV's main FM station, currently a contemporary jazz community radio format that has recently added student involvement in the evening hours, about 9 p.m. to early morning. And she's talking a little bit, though, about how the programming plan is to offer this sort of music discovery format. And another question that you, Eric, and Jennifer asked Kylie was her opinion about Nevada Public Radio's proposal to offer some student positions at KUNV. Principally, I think it's three internships and one graduate assistantship. And she seemed skeptical about the number of them being offered. And she was also concerned about how hands-on those opportunities might be compared to being able to do actual shows weeknights. Would there be really a sufficient number of opportunities for students at the station? And as of yet, you know, she knows the number, and she seemed to think that that wasn't quite enough. Although certainly Flo expressed to us that she would like to involve more students, although there seemed to be no concrete plans.
This story is complicated.
They're all complicated.
Yeah. But, and now this one is like my, you know, as I've been saying of late, like I'm building my moral compass lately, my radio survivor moral compass, putting it together piece by piece. And I'm just going to go out on a limb again and say that I would prefer my radio survivor moral compass points towards a college radio station just excitingly fully staffed by students, some of them who are paid and some of them who are volunteers, men, and they're running a radio station. And that's not what KUNV is primarily, and that's not what is being proposed. So
the problem we have here, one, is we don't know the story of when the students lost control of the main FM station.
Something happened in the 80s?
Right. And it's been alluded to, but we have not yet uncovered that story. So if you are somebody who knows that story and would like
the oral history of this station,
inform us and fill us in on what exactly happened that caused the university to go to a more professionally operated community/public radio kind of hybrid. We'd love to know. Send us an email, podcast@radiosurvivor.com. We'd be glad to share that. But it's also not an unusual occurrence. That happened at a bunch of stations along the lines of the 1990s. So I can't speak at all about
stations operated by colleges that were changed.
Where student involvement was minimized, and often there's often a triggering moment where somebody messes up big time.
Someone talks about butts and farts.
Yeah, where fines happen, yeah. Or someone lets loose of the wheel, or says something really inflammatory. And usually that is usually a straw that breaks the camel's back situation. Right. Where perhaps there's been lots of, you know, smaller incidents or lots of acting out or people difficult to control that finally leads up to a big event. But we know we don't know that story. The problem I see is that you have a station that, to me, looking at it this, knowing what I know now, I would say it's a station where it seems like nobody was completely happy with it. Which isn't to say that there's anything wrong with this station. This is so true of community radio stations in general. People are aware.
Somebody liked their jazz station.
They liked their jazz station.
Thousands of people liked their jazz station.
But there's some acknowledgement, right, that student involvement could have been better. And there was moves afoot to sort of begin correcting that. It appears probably without knowledge of this other proposal in the works.
But perhaps with a little bit of knowledge.
Again, we don't know, right? We don't have that perspective. And I think that this is what I see happening time and again.
Right. We've talked about this on Radio Survivor.
Right. It's where college stations sort of wander from their path. And that wandering can be that student involvement goes down. In this case, it was by design, but sometimes it's sort of by attrition. And the wandering is where university administrations start to look at their stations and go, why do we have it? And they start to say, well, is it serving students? We're not certain it's serving students. Well, is it serving the community? We're not certain, or we're not certain how, or how valuable it is.
Or is that our job? Is it the job of a university to service a community that's not the university?
In this way, right. And look, we can come up with many legitimate arguments for why a publicly funded university should have that sort of mission, right? So I'm not voicing this observation as if I agree with it. as if I think that universities have no business running community radio stations. In fact, there are some great community radio stations run by universities, and it's fantastic that they do so. But what also seems to happen there is there seems to be in these stations, there's this growing disconnect where the station kind of just keeps motoring along.
Right.
And it's there. It's part of sort of the assets or the portfolio of the university. And they don't pay too much attention to it. They just keep writing the checks until those checks get larger.
And so on the one hand, this episode of Radio Survivor is we're trying to shed light as much as possible on what's happening right now in Nevada with their university radio station. On the other hand, this is an episode of Radio Survivor in which there might be other community radio stations out there, quite possibly operated by colleges and universities, that you would give them advice, right, Paul? Can I put words in your mouth?
Yeah,
you would give them advice to involve more students today,
right?
To
make sure that you are providing service to your community, not make the assumption that simply by existing you are.
What does that mean for, especially for in a university? Like, I mean, Jennifer Waits is a huge proponent of the educational opportunities, the hidden educational opportunities in working at a college radio station.
So I think that that is definitely part of it, because the university is part of your community. And to think about what are the needs of the community around you. Information needs. It could be culture. It doesn't have to be news and public affairs, but to be thinking about it and thinking about that engagement, because the fact is every college and university thinks about community engagement. They do so both for reasons that are high-minded and are about mission-driven, and they do so for reasons that are utterly defensive, that are about maintaining good relationships with adjoining towns and municipalities, about having good neighbors, about not being resented by the people who live in the cities and towns around them. And in addition to the more mission-driven things in which they share their resources, whether it's from things like medical clinics to free lectures to sharing, you know, the educational resources with the community around them, I think it is wise for a college-owned station to think about themselves in those terms. How are we sharing this resource and the resources of our campus with the community? And as community radio, that's certainly one way, by sharing the airtime. Mm-hmm. Another way, of course, is to think about, well, how do we share all these great things that are happening at our university, all and the resource of our faculty, our researchers, and our students? And I don't have one answer there, but I think it's even asking the question. And this, you know, this is goes back to thinking about who your audience is and what do they want, as opposed to what do I want them to know? Yeah. What do I think they need versus what do they tell me they need? And there's always imperfect information, and there's no perfect way of gauging it. However, to pose the question and begin answering it starts you on that journey. And so what I see here, from my perspective, looking at KUNV, is a station that has motored along just fine. And the fact that it was receiving community service grants from the CPB helped it to motor along just fine. It sounds as though it really didn't call negative attention to itself. However, there isn't a sense that I get, at least, you know, hearing from Flo, that over the course of the last decade, that university presidents have looked at it as some great asset either. And therein lies the problem. Ask yourself, would our university president, would our chancellor, would our board of trustees, our board of regents, would our deans and vice presidents think of our station as an asset, as a jewel in the crown, as something that they would hold up as something to be proud of, or would it be regarded more like the power plant on campus? Well, we have it. We kind of need it. There's no great thing to get rid of it, but there's no reason to hold it up.
This is something I didn't know about until the Radio Survivor podcast started to take up a portion of my life. And it was this opportunity will allow us to refocus on our mission of education. Refocus. So if the people that run your educational institution are able to say that getting rid of the responsibility of running the station would allow them to refocus on the educational mission, then why wasn't your station focused on that before the troubles?
Exactly. I mean, and I think – and that's human nature. Right. When something is sort of working and sort of cruising along, complacency is natural. I can't sit here and hold anyone.
No, it's a tragedy.
In some ways, it's a tragedy, but
not,
I can't.
I mean, you know.
Right. But you know,
they're bigger tragedy.
It is not as if I've never been complacent. It is never as if I've never just sort of let something kind of motor along when it could be improved because there's nothing really kicking my ass into improving it. And this is a situation in which an ass is getting kicked. For all intents and purposes.
Yeah, some people are going to lose their radio station or that's the threat.
That's the threat. Or maybe there is a third way. What was interesting to hear from Flo, and I hope that this is an actual opportunity, is it sounded as if she was embracing the opportunity to assess the role of the station and assess its operation in general. And the fact is that Nevada Public Radio has a specific proposal as well. And I wondered to what extent Nevada Public Radio was open to broadening that discussion, modification of that proposal for something that might more meet in particular the desires and the needs of the students, while also maybe bringing it in this direction towards music discovery, or at least some sort of format that might also better appeal to people the age of students at UNLV.
I don't know how to run a giant radio station, so I can't give someone like Flo Rogers advice, but I would love to listen to the kind of radio station that I imagine would have a lot more student voices and student involvement than one in which the students were outside observers or there are three interns in the station. I like college radio.
Yeah. I mean, and so now the discussion is open again. And, you know, perhaps that is a good thing for the students of UNLV and for the community that listens to the radio. It might be a difficult thing for many of the current volunteers and staff at KUNV because
clearly is, yeah.
Yeah, because it may require radically rethinking the type of programming the station does in general.
Yeah, and who has a show and who doesn't,
have a show. And here's a thing that I want to challenge every community radio broadcaster to do. And that's to imagine your station without your show. Because to me, one of the most pernicious tendencies in community radio is the sense of a slot of airtime as property, which a DJ or programmer owns, rather than is permitted the use of.
Yeah.
Because too often the station and my show become one. And so progress, changes that might improve the overall service of the station, changes that might allow the station to adjust with the times are held up because individuals are unwilling to embrace that change themselves.
Yeah, there was a remarkable, historically significant, and for the purposes of this podcast, unnamed radio show at KPFA that when the visionary DJ who had been operating that program for decades in that slot passed away, willed it to his family, who continued it, and it wasn't good for everybody.
Right.
In the end.
Exactly.
You can't, you shouldn't will your radio station to your air. You shouldn't will your slot, your 2 hours of airtime to your descendants.
Right. And that's not right. 'Cause it fundamentally, it's not good for the station and it's not necessarily good for listeners, because what is then taken out of the equation is whether or not the show accomplishes something that is in the benefit of the community and the listeners there. I do not propose a standard by which you judge this. What I propose is that the question must be asked, and that every single programmer should be willing to assess their program and be willing to, one, make changes, two, change when it airs, or three, go off the air altogether.
Yeah, and changing your slot is a really rough one for a lot of people.
It is,
face.
And it's understandable. And I understand the sense of loss, and I understand how people feel about their shows.
And why they would get excited and defend it at
exactly.
all, as much as they could.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But that also –
been there.
Right. You know, I understand that. But at the same time, that is often becomes the sort of the lead that sinks the station below the surface.
Didn't Matthew Lasar write a book about this?
Indeed. And so that's
in
why,
in case we have new listeners.
Why and talking about the programmers at KUNV who I assume invest a lot of themselves, their time,
yeah.
their effort into their programs. I don't wish to undermine or say that those efforts aren't valuable. However, it does not mean they therefore have the right necessarily to have that show on any station.
Yeah.
Because stations ultimately are not just little collections of fiefdoms. Right.
Right. And you're saying that because you've been in the room before where programmers have said, that.
Yes. For yeah.
I have a right to this
right.
show. This is my
if
show.
If we think about community radio
or listeners
as community, not a conglomeration of 84 individual sort of states. It's interesting that people in community radio who tend to have more left politics than right tend to swing towards very radical libertarianism. Right.
And
when it comes to their shows,
yeah.
as opposed to defending the vitality of their stations. And it's an interesting and just a side point, interesting reason why college radio often is more vibrant, because it has usually when it's staffed by students, there's enforced turnover.
Right.
Every semester, students usually have a different academic schedule, which then therefore forces them to have a different show schedule.
Right.
And then they graduate.
And then and there's also – we know that there are community stations that currently function with that legacy that it seems to serve them very well, that mm-hmm. that they have a cycle, like a seasonal reflection on what they're doing with their shows, and are the shows still serving that mission, as opposed to considering like, I got it. I got my show and I'm going to keep it now for as long as my heart beats
right.
in my chest.
So in my perfect world, there would be an opportunity for KUNV programmers and staff to come to the table with students at the HD2.
Yeah.
With some representatives of the administration, with representatives of Nevada Public Radio, and together come up with a vision of the station that could move it forward and embrace more students, probably embrace some update of programming, but to see how everyone can come to some level of agreement. And I know that I'm dreaming, because there will be some people who will not be willing or able to do that. They will
yeah.
be who will say, no, it needs to remain jazz. I've got these whatever listeners, and they will suffer, and it must remain, and it cannot change, and it should not change. And the simple fact of the matter is that every radio station changes. It happens.
This one did.
Sometimes it happens through this type of disruption that comes from outside or forces beyond your control. Sometimes it comes from forces within your control. So if I'm going to turn this around into my final piece of advice, it is that complacency is probably the most vulnerable position. Grasping onto your air spot or your programming schedule for dear life is also probably the second most vulnerable position to be in. And so to preserve maybe your own engagement with radio, but in particular your station's continued vitality and engagement with its community, it is in your best interest to embrace change and become part of the change before it is forced upon you. Rather than waiting until it may be too late. And in this case, it's unclear if it's too late or not. The decision has been forestalled. We'll continue to cover it. And thank you all for listening to my opinions on it.
Thank you for giving us your opinion, Paul. And I want to say thank you to Ken Lang, to Kelly, to Kylie O'Rourke, and to Flo Rogers for helping us understand this issue better and spending their time telling us what they know. And thanks to Jennifer Waits.
And I have one last piece of follow-up. In our last program, we discussed the bankruptcy of the music streaming service RDO, RDIO, and the acquisition of its assets by Pandora. A listener who wishes not to be identified wrote in to say, as part of that deal, Pandora isn't actually acquiring the contracts that RDO has with the record labels themselves. And that's in part because it's a bankruptcy proceeding. Mm-hmm. It's not an outright. So, and in fact, Pandora, while it's the sort of the leading bidder, it seems as though they're going to acquire it. A bankruptcy court will have to approve that sale.
Huh.
So it's not. So RDO is declaring bankruptcy. Pandora has announced its intention to buy the assets in bankruptcy. It's not a situation which Pandora is buying RDO outright. That's why Pandora ostensibly can get it at fire sale prices, because it is on clearance. It's a fire sale.
Yeah, but the idea about why you wanted to talk about that still remains solid. That there's a whole lot of consolidation and energy in the streaming online radio music world,
and it does affect terrestrial radio. And one very large terrestrial radio owner got stung.
Yeah, that would be Cumulus
with its investment in RDO. So I just wanted to make that clarification. And I checked into that information.
Yeah, thanks so much to that listener for helping us out.
It does look as though that's correct. That Pandora will probably, you know, in effect, will end up in a better bargaining position with the major labels than it has been because of acquiring these assets, but will probably have to forge new contracts, probably that look a lot like what were forged with RDO. So that's our follow-up. We always want to hear what you think. Send us an email to podcast@radiosurvivor.com or communicate with us on Twitter or Facebook.
Or the forums on this podcast episode will be you are welcome to join the Radio Survivor Forum community and write what you need to say.
And also ask questions of the community.
Right.
We've had a number of questions that get answered about things like from interviewing tips to the best control boards to get for your station. All sorts of great questions get brought up. RadioSurvivor.com/forum. And, you know, as we get towards the end of the year here, I will remind you this is a listener and reader supported enterprise. We really hope that maybe you have a little bit of extra money towards the end of 2015 that you could throw our way. You could support us with a one-time donation, or you could support us with some ongoing support. You could support us with ongoing contributions via our Patreon campaign. You can learn about all of those at radiosurvivor.com/support. And here's a point at which we also need to tell you we're going to take a week off.
Yeah, for the holidays, for the darkest part of the year. We're not going to produce a podcast.
So we're going to take a break. So next week there will be no show, but we will come back in 2 weeks. With our sort of year in review.
Yeah,
we're going to wrap up our first year of podcasting.
I'm looking forward to it. All of a sudden, I just wanted to talk about how dark it is. We'll leave that out.
Well, luckily, it's not dark right this minute.
No, but it's...
But it will be dark in just a few hours.
Until we're done.
So, and of course, you can find all the show notes. We'll have links to things we talked about in the show at radiosurvivor.com/podcast. You can see a theme. Everything's at radiosurvivor.com.
It's a good website.
Also, hey, if you leave us a review at iTunes, we'd love it. So if you use iTunes, leave us a review. It helps people find our show. We've sort of stalled out in a number of reviews. So it would be great if we could get some new ones up there and help to sort of push our rank up in the grand iTunes store. Thanks a lot for listening.
Thanks for all your work today, Paul.
Thank you, Eric.
Yeah, it was a good episode.